Hello and welcome to Scriptmate, the podcast for writers who dream of seeing their words spoken by paid actors on some sort of screen. I'm your host, Tim Schulberger, writer and founder of Write LA, a script coaching and screenplay competition site. Joining me is the, as always, is the highly skilled and wildly opinionated writer, Tony Giambusso. Hello, Tony.
Hey, Tim.
Coming up in this podcast, we're going to talk feedback, the different types, why you need it, how to make it work for you, and how to try and avoid driving yourself insane. And I do stress try to avoid. So we've also got some questions from you guys, some movie moments that are instructive. That means movies we've seen that we feel we got something from, and some exciting, very exciting Aussie trivia.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
I'm actually throwing myself into the Aussie trivia today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I really am.
Self-promotion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm Aussie and I'm into trivia and I have some background in the movie business. So I thought, why not combine all three?
Yeah, I love it.
All right, let's get into it. Feedback.
Yeah. You start us off, Ted.
Well, feedback is this very broad term and it gets used a lot. And I thought that we could use just a minute to kind of break down what I consider the different types of feedback. Each one of them is important, but they are different and they provide different things. And I think the more you are aware of what the different types of feedback are, the more you can decide where your script's at and which sort of feedback you're ready for and what to expect from that feedback in order to make your script better. So the three types, I think, are friends, people like me, who is a script coach slash feedback person who gets paid to do it, and industry types, you know, like agents, managers, directors of photography, whatever, anybody who's in the film business. They're the three. So shall I go through them quickly?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, friends is obviously where you're starting out and you're just getting feedback from someone who has absolutely no idea what they're doing. They're just reading it as almost like a member of the audience, and but they know you, so they're going to be probably kinder than anybody else, unless they know you and they're going to be less kind than anybody else, depending on your relationship with that person. And that gives you something when you're starting out. People like me, I'll go into why I think I'm really important later. But people like me are paid script coaches who you pay a fee to, and they send you either written feedback or written feedback and a Zoom or a coffee, which is what I do, both of those. Or, for example, if you enter a competition and you pay for feedback, the sort of feedback you get from that. So it's kind of like professional feedback. Mm-hmm. And then there are industry types who are people who are looking to you, whether or not they want to rep you, represent you, or make your movie. And they're going to give you feedback on a different level because they have different interests.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the feedback you get from the professionals is just nothing at all. You just send something and you hear nothing back and there's your feedback.
Right.
and you got to sort of interpret that. Yes. Or you get what the people refer to as the soft no. Which is just, you know, we already have something like that on here. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Like, keep on working.
really see what you're trying to do, but it didn't quite work for us.
Yeah. Good luck, in your future endeavors kind of thing.
Or I got a lot. This is really cute. Keep us in mind for future projects.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is, I didn't identify with this script. So as I've said, the word cute can be a death knell. If you see, oh, it's really cute. It's like, ugh. I didn't connect with it emotionally, so go away.
Yeah, I think that first group, I think is the sort of circle of friends group, is very important. It's like supplemental to the second group, the professional feedback. That circle of readers that one has, or where people that understand sort of the voice of your own voice as a writer, and what you're, you know, trying to do with your material, and they can help you write, you know, there's a level of trust and they can help you execute the script that you're trying to write, as opposed to sometimes some random person might not understand, you know, the goals that you have. But sometimes that's a good thing to send it to, you know, you get it to a point where then you take it out of that circle and you bring it to an industry professional or someone like you, Tim, for some professional feedback that says, maybe you and your circle of friends haven't thought of this. Right. Let me pull you out of that. And that circle of friends sometimes includes writing groups. I was lucky to get to be in a writing group with you very briefly.
Yep.
I met a lot of, all three of those were in that writing group. There was professional feedback, industry professionals, and people like me at the time that were just sort of starting out. But hearing your words, you know, out loud, or getting your pages read by as, you know, people, as many other people as possible, and hearing what I'll say, like, discourse. I think discourse is a very important part of becoming a good writer.
Yeah.
And not just discourse on your own material, but you talking about other people's work, or hearing other people talk about other people's work.
Oh, definitely.
It's so important, because you can take the emotion out a little bit and you can go, oh yeah, I do that.
Yes.
And I can see it so clearly now that I'm looking at it from the other side.
Yes. Yes. And I think we should stress at this point, two things. One is, if you have any dreams of being a screenwriter who gets paid money, you can't avoid feedback. Mm. It's unavoidable. The script that you give to a producer is not the script that will be shot. The script that they hand to a director when they go on set is not the script that will end up being shot word for word. So your script is a sort of an evolving, fluid thing. And the quicker you can get a handle on that, the easier your life will be in the screenwriting business, even if it's not even a business, because you just can't avoid feedback. So the more precious you are with your words, the harder it is it's going to be for you. And so I urge you listening at this point there's this sort of, because you also hear advice is like, stay true to your dream, hold on to your vision, and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, yes, but at this point, if you're unsigned and you don't have a career, you don't have a lot of capital and you don't have a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that you pander and you just do whatever someone tells you to do. But it does mean you have to be receptive to feedback.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, it's that balance between not having it be a tool of procrastination where you're just, I'm just going to sit home and I'm just going to write and write and write and write and write. I'm not going to send it to anyone. I'm not going to get any feedback. If I work on it for this long, then it must be good enough to send to whatever place. And then
Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg, exactly. Yeah. But at the same time, you don't want to just skip that and just say, it's good enough. Let me just send it and my feedback will come from the highest levels. If you can get to the highest levels, it's like you got to workshop the thing and you got to really... you got to workshop it, but not to the point where you're workshopping it to death. And so there's so many opportunities to get your material out there into the world. Again, just repeating to people like Tim, to you, Tim, or writers groups or things like that, where you're putting your stuff on your feet and you're hearing it out loud, or you're having conversations. And that sort of leads to my biggest thing about feedback is I love to have a conversation if I'm lucky enough to have a long conversation, because I think so much about becoming a good or working on your getting your script to the highest level is being able to tell the person who's giving you feedback what your intention is in any given moment.
Yep.
And then you can, okay, here's my intention. And then we can decide, is that good? And if we decide that it's good, how do we bridge the gap between my intention and what's actually on the page? And that other person can genuinely, so many times I've heard that where it's like, oh, that's good. I like that. That's a good idea, Tony. That's not what's here. That's not what's on the page. And I go, oh, okay. And then we kind of figure it out. Whereas if that person was just reading and giving me notes, we wouldn't have had that little bit of conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. I do. I have Zoom conversations. Usually I provide written feedback and then I have a chat.
Hmm.
And what's fascinating, because my philosophy is always, I'm not trying to tell you the script that I think you should write or the script that I would write. I'm trying to understand what you're trying to do. And then how can I help that? How can I help it reach its full potential? So conversations are very important. Listening is very important. So let's move into, what do you do with feedback? Like, how do you handle it? Because that's its own thing. And I know we don't have a lot of time, so we'll touch on it briefly. When you get feedback, there are different types of feedback. Sometimes you get people who say, "I'll just make it funnier."
Hmm.
That's useless feedback, essentially, because there's no action there. There's nothing you can do with that. That's one person's opinion. It's a vague opinion. They're not giving you anything. They may have read a little bit. It's okay to kind of let that one go, because there's what do you do with that? I mean, obviously, you didn't deliver them a script if it was a comedy. that was like, well, these are my B jokes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I thought that I would just start bad and then get funnier. I mean, that's just not, no one operates like that. So that's a stupid note. So what you're trying to get from feedback is a sense, and that's why I think what we're saying too is don't just show it to one person, show it to several people, because then you start to find common themes.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if you're in a writer's group, you get all those people in the same room listening to it at the same time, which is great. But you can try to hit on common themes. And what I did with my writing, what I do with my writing, and when I got feedback when I was in the writing group, and what I tell people is that I will read feedback or listen to feedback and write it all down, and then I will put it away. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning I'll be in the shower. Okay. And when I'm in the shower, I will try to remember what the feedback was. Like, what did I get? And it's the points that I can recall are usually the points where they're pricking something that I already suspected but didn't want to deal with, or it's something I think is useful. And so I tend to target those because it's like, okay, well, that's the stuff that's resonating with me.
Yeah.
Let me think about that. How can I incorporate that into the script? Because the tricky thing with feedback is that you want to listen to it, but you don't want to listen to it completely.
Yeah. And that is a thing that a lot of newer writers do, is they say, oh, thank you. They're like overcorrecting, where they're just putting
or undercorrecting. They're either like, you don't know what you're talking about. This is genius.
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. Or, okay, cool. I just did literally the things that you said. And you're like, God, what? Not really like that. Like, you got to make it your own. Yeah, I do kind of the opposite. Well, it's similar, but the opposite of what you do, where I write everything down.
It's similar, but different.
Yeah, similar, but different. First of all, take notes when you're getting feedback, please. Even if you're pretending to take notes, because the person who spent a lot of time, if it's a friend, obviously, that you've gone out of your way to read a script, you took notes, you might have been 2-3 hours of your life plus this conversation. You want to feel like they're at least writing down some things notes. So do that. And that's what I do. And I take extensive notes. And then I take a day, I go back to my notes, and I basically take notes on my notes. And I will organize them. I'll say, oh, these are character notes, these are story notes, these are notes that I can knock off easy, just fix this logic flaw, blah 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 blah. And then I sort of start chipping away at it, and I organize, because sometimes you get a bunch of notes and it's just overwhelming, you don't even know where to start, you know, you have to re-outline. And sometimes it's helpful for me to just kind of break everything down and kind of slow it down and just go kind of piece by piece by piece. And I sometimes do that where I incorporate everyone's notes into that one major document, and I procrastinate for a while, and then just sit down and knock it out.
Yeah. I mean, procrastination is part of writing. Yeah. Let's just, no one's
part of the writing process.
Yeah, these people here is like, oh yeah, I write for 8 hours a day. It's like, did they?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, come on, you're allowed to procrastinate. It's okay. So you need the feedback in order to understand where your script's going. There is absolutely no way you on your own can determine whether you have written something that will entertain strangers. You can have a sense, and especially the more experienced you get, you can kind of get more of a feeling that, like, hey, I'm onto something here. But until you show it to other people, you really can't get a sense of where you're at entirely. And there will be holes in your script that you can't see. So feedback is important for that. Just like, by the way, telling people your story idea, please tell people this idea that I can't tell you or you'll steal it is just a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
How you deal with the feedback, accept it, separate it from your own personality. I spent a lot of time in my early years of writing hoping the feedback would tell me how awesome I was and validate my writing rather than listening to what they were saying to make the script better.
Yeah.
So don't worry. Try it if you can. It's hard, but try to separate yourself from the words on the page. They are merely words on the page, and you will write more words on the page. You can always write more words.
Yeah.
They are, if someone's giving you feedback saying this script isn't working and here is why, they're not saying you suck as a writer or you suck as a human being. They're saying, you know what, let's tweak this thing. Let's get in here. Let's roll our sleeves up and see if we can make these words on the page more impactful, given I have an understanding of what you're trying to do. So separating your own ego from it is really hard, but really important. And then tips for staying sane. I mean, I think that's what I wrote down in my note. It's like, you know, you just have to sort of, like I was saying, you just have to try to kind of let this go. It's like, this is part of the process. Rewriting is writing.
Rewriting is part of the process. I think sometimes I'm less interested in someone knowing if someone liked it or not, versus thinking of that the person giving feedback as sort of like a craftsperson. Mm-hmm. If I'm giving you a script of, you know, there's something nice about you liking a thing, but some people are more interested in certain genres. Some people are less interested in certain genres. There's certain movies I wouldn't recommend to certain people, but I'll still send every genre of script to someone, even if I know they hate that genre. But so I'm less interested in, yes, this is my favorite movie, I would watch this, and more like, I'm a craftsperson, I'm looking at this, the story is not working, the characters are not working. Not, oh, I don't like them, right. It's I'm not responding to them, and here are the reasons why.
Right.
And I'm more interested in that than just that sort of hit of dopamine or whatever, where you go, did you like it? Did you like it? And it's like,
dopamine, well, or self-loathing.
That's not, yeah, or self-loathing. That's not really the point. I just, no matter what, you're going to get in there and you're going to help move things around. You're going to adjust things. You're going to help me. Like you said, it's words on a page. We're going to get into this document and it's like, everything is movable. You know, everything is changeable. Yeah. It's not like, oh no, I don't have any more marble to chip away at. It's like, right. No, it's just go on, you know, just delete.
And then finally, the other thing is the when I know a script is working versus when it's not working, or when the feedback is sort of shifting, is when you start to get feedback where people are getting into choices the characters are making, or decisions, or plot points. It's like, oh, I didn't like that they did that, or that made me worry that they were doing that, or that annoyed me that this character did this, or that this happened. That's a sign that your script has moved from, I don't understand what's going on, and I don't connect with anybody in here, to, why would that character do that? I'm with them. I'm in them. Now
I've accepted that the premise of this character, and now I'm challenging that you messed up.
Yes.
This is a character that I like now, that I'm responding to now. You gotta make this right.
Yes.
You know?
And so why that's are they a behaving good place badly? Yeah, I don't want them to do that.
Yeah.
Then you can kind of say, okay, fine. I've now moved. This script has now moved into the next level.
Yeah.
Where I'm not getting feedback on, like, I don't know what the hell's going on. Or why would you have them do that? Or this plot point doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
They're now filtering it through their own emotional lens, which is what they do when they watch, which is what everybody does when they watch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually getting to the point where they're now starting to interpret it.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. So that's actually a good sign. If people are kind of giving you feedback on that level,
he's
like, okay, well, they understand what's going on. They get the characters, they get the plot, everything's working. Now they're just having opinions.
Sometimes the longest note sessions for me are the scripts that are working because we get into so much nitty gritty, because when something completely is not working, you kind of stay on the macro. You're like, we can't even get into that little detail because that's going to change.
Right.
That scene's not going to be here anymore.
Right.
So.
So there you go. So that's feedback. Now, just a quick word on why you should have someone like me. There are podcasts out there that will tell you that you should never pay someone to give you written feedback. And I obviously fundamentally disagree with that. And here's why. The people who get paid to give you feedback, if you find a good one, and I am a good one, will actually help you in a way that your friends and family can't, and that someone in the industry won't, because like a potential literary manager or an agent, they're looking at it, or a producer, they're looking at it really specifically, like, can I represent you? Can I make this film? And the people in between are people like me who have enough experience and have enough knowledge, who can look at the script and say, okay, what are you trying to do? Let's help you do this. And I would liken it, and again, these podcast people who are like, unless the person's won an Academy Award, you really can't listen to them, or they're a thoroughly successful paid screenwriter. Mm. Well, I would argue that means that anybody coaching in the NFL needs to have won a Super Bowl as a player, and that's trash. No one believes that a player who wins the Super Bowl is automatically an awesome coach. So it's just the same in screenwriting. Just because you might not have won an Oscar or written major Hollywood films doesn't mean that you don't have a role to play in making your script better. So I encourage you to look for people. It doesn't have to be me, but look for people who can assist you. And yes, you may have to spend some money. It's up to you to choose how much money you want to spend and who those people are. But I encourage you, that's definitely a part of the process that I think is useful. Even if it's feedback from a screenwriting competition, that's next level down, because you don't know who's writing the feedback, and it's usually, brief.
Yeah. But I think an important thing you said there is it's part of the process, which means that it's supplemental. It's not just don't get your, when we talked about circle of readers, it's like, ignore everybody else, just pay all your, spend all your money on you know, feedback services. It's like, no, do your research, find the people. I mean, for you, Tim, I mean, you have a podcast, you have a book, you have seminars, you have articles. So people can decide if you are someone who they think can help your screenplay, and your very sort of face value. This is who I am. This is the kind of feedback that I give, and people can go and experience it for themselves. But you're also saying do all these other things too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it is just like a helpful thing. And I think some of the maybe less quality feedback services or things like that say, we got you.
Yeah.
Don't worry about anything else. Just come to me. Give me all of your, just direct deposit right to me, and I'll take care of you. And I like, that's why I respond to what you do, because that's not what you're saying. You're saying like, I'm part of the process.
Yeah.
And I want to help you bridge the gap from, you know, unsigned, unpaid writer to paid writer. Yeah. And it's, you're not trying to prove anything. It's just.
No. And I actually have a thing. I get to about two or three drafts and then I say, I can't help you anymore. Because it's like I don't have the perspective anymore. Mm. So yeah, absolutely. Okay, we need to move on.
Sure.
Feedback. If you have any other questions, you can always email us, tim@write-la.com, and we can dive into feedback with you personally. Also, if you want feedback, you can use that address to contact me. Movie moments.
Yeah, so just a movie moment I really responded to was from the movie Looper, 2012, directed by Rian Johnson. Yeah.
Where Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis supposed to be the same person.
Same person, right. Yeah. I bought it. I loved it. I'm a big fan of Rian Johnson's movies and those actors. So in that movie, it's all about time travel, and there's lots of time travel logic. And I thought of this because I was recently working on something that had sort of a supernatural element, a portal to another universe kind of thing. But we were just trying to tell, like, a grounded romantic comedy drama. We weren't trying to tell a super in-depth time travel Christopher Nolan-esque story. And we were trying to find, like, how do we satiate the audience that wants to know, like, well, what about this? What are the implications of this portal without getting too deep into the science? And I think sometimes it's just about having characters ask the question that the audience asks, even if the answer is not given within the script. So in Looper, I have it up here, there's a moment where they meet each other for the first time. It's Joe and Old Joe are the characters. Right.
Bruce and Joe.
Yeah. And you know, Young Joe says, do you know what's going to happen? Have you already done all this right now as me? He's basically asking the question that the audience should ask, which is, what does this all mean? And he says, I don't want to talk about time travel shit, because we'll start talking about it and then we'll be here all day making diagrams with straws. It doesn't matter. And then they just move on. And the logic was for them was, and they go on to say, like, you know, much smarter people than us are already figuring out the implications. I don't have all the answers. So let's just deal with what we know in this moment. And I thought, what a wonderful way to just say, forget it. Just ignore the grandfather paradox and all the stuff, and just say, like, we're just in a movie here, guys. Right. And then I could relax as the viewer, not thinking, wait, am I supposed to understand? Is this an Easter egg? Is this that?
Right.
And I just really responded to that moment.
Very good. Mine is Notting Hill. I rewatched Notting Hill over the holidays. And Notting Hill from a perspective of supporting characters, because I talk a lot about characters and how supporting characters are really assets that are underutilized in the vast majority of scripts that I read, where it's like they're up there to provide something for the main character. They're not their own character. They don't have their own story. Mm-hmm. They're just sort of there as props, really. And they're too often used as props, which is not a good thing. Have a look at Notting Hill, because all of those little support characters all have their own, they're all people. And they're all dealing with their own crap. Mm-hmm. And they all have little moments during it, and they all talk about themselves. And yet they also contribute to the world that Hugh Grant finds himself in, and the world they provide for Julia Roberts' character when she comes in. So I think Notting Hill is a fantastic example of what to do with your supporting characters.
The side characters, the supporting characters in that movie are amazing. I mean, that dinner scene when she comes in, everyone feels so unique. And then, like you said, they affect the plot in a big way, and they don't feel like plot devices. They feel like real people. So at the end, when they're like, what are you talking? That's what she said to you? I'm just a girl sitting around.
Right.
And it feels so like, oh, of course they would say that. Yep. And then it feels so much more satisfying when they all drive him to, it just makes you want to be in a group of friends.
the other example of that is Four Weddings and a Funeral, where all the support characters, but then Four Weddings is problematic nowadays for a bunch of other reasons, because I rewatched that. But Notting Hill, have a look. And the guy, what was it, Reese Ifans, the guy who played his roommate?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
he's
didn't
huge.
He launch his career from that? I mean, every actor wants to have a, if they're in a, if in a movie as a supporting character, they want that supporting character to leap off the screen and leap off the page. So it gives you a tremendous opportunity, these supporting characters.
Yeah.
And you only need a little bit of thought, like, okay, who are they and how can they be, how can they contribute in an entertaining way rather than just as a plot device?
Him in that movie is so good as a lesson for screenwriting, because he is so over the top and so quirky and eccentric. But I also, I say this to my wife sometimes when I'm watching characters that are too eccentric, I say, I don't know how they brush their teeth in the morning. I don't know how this person lives, but I kind of understand how that guy lives. Yeah. He like makes sense in the world while also being, you know, and that's a combination of, you know, directing, acting, and screenwriating.
So have a look. So that's the thing. Yeah. Okay.
Let me ask you some questions from the audience. So we've had a couple questions about music cues in scripts, specifically like saying, this artist and this song plays, you know, Stairway to Heaven plays over the thing.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, so yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, well, the compromise is to say a song like Stairway to Heaven, because you don't have the rights to the song. And if you are unfamiliar with the way movies are made, people who write songs charge an absolute fortune to have their song used in a movie. And the bigger the movie, the more the agent will charge. So just as an example, I did a TV show for the Travel Channel called Lawrence of America on our YouTube channel if you want to see the episodes. We wanted to use Crystal Gayle's Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue. And this is for a cable TV show. And they charged us like $7,000 or $8,000 for 10 seconds of that song.
Yeah.
And that was probably the biggest budget spend we did on the entire series. So, and that's just this crappy little cable channel song. So imagine a Hollywood movie. So the more you go in saying it must be this song, it has to be Stairway to Heaven, the more a producer says, well, you don't know what you're doing, because there's very little chance we'll get it. And even if we do, who knows? And there's just a fight. And why are you hog-tying me to this in this script? So music cues, and I see a lot of writers who like really believe that they need to sort of direct the script on the page. Mm-hmm. And I get that you hear a song in your head and you think it will go really well under this and be really impactful. But unfortunately, and people even write to me and suggest that I listen to these songs while I'm reading. Mm-hmm. I don't do that, just so you know, because that's not my job. I'm not watching the movie. I'm reading the script. So I would caution you to get too heavily invested in music cues.
Yeah.
Songs like can play, or you could just say, you know, heavy metal montage, or, you know, like loud song underneath this. Yeah. But again, I don't know if it's really necessary, because I'm reading the page. I don't necessarily need a music background. That can be something when you talk to the director, but I really just don't, there isn't really a huge place unless the music is in some way really important. Like, I would argue what's popping into my head is like the piano.
Yeah.
You know, where music is front and center. So then obviously that's something.
Well, I think sometimes people are trying to, it's almost like a cheat to say, I want this scene to have this level of energy. So instead of writing it through action text and character and story, I'm going to just say, this is the song that plays, because that's the song I was listening to. Listening to music while you're writing or while you're generating ideas, great.
Yeah.
But then you say, well, I want to tell the audience how I felt the whole time. Sometimes I've used it if I'm actually using it to tell the story, where I'm saying, I think it would be interesting here if, you know, like in, I think, a Deadpool movie, they played an Annie song over a huge fight scene.
Right.
And so there's something interesting there where you'd say, well, what if this is playing while this is happening, and you're trying to teach the reader, oh, this is the sort of the vibe. But if you're just saying this, you know, hardcore heavy metal scene is playing while people are fighting, it's like, well, that's kind of what I would have expected anyway. Yeah. You didn't need to tell me that. Just like you don't need to tell me extreme close-up if you just say an object. I'm assuming that we're looking at that object.
Yeah, yeah. Please don't do that. But also, I think you're probably pissing off a director too, the more specific you get. Because he's like, they're like, well, I want to put my stamp on this.
Yeah.
So yeah. So music cues, unnecessary.
Yeah. There's a lot of sort of vague questions that I'll just put into this one, which is sort of the importance of the first 5 to 10 pages. A lot of people talk about that all the time. That's sort of, oh, their first 10 pages have to be perfect. And just kind of what that means, and you as a reader, what you're actually looking at or looking for, what's pulling you away in those first.
Well, I mean, Sean mentioned that in a previous podcast, our literary manager, saying that they are the most important pages. They are the most important pages. I never believed that when I was younger and writing. I thought, but my surprise twist at the end will get you. No. I can tell in the first couple of pages whether you know what you're doing. I've read enough scripts now. I can absolutely promise you. I can tell you whether you've written an outline. I can tell you whether you have written more than one script, usually. I can tell you whether you have a solid command of craft. And so anybody in the industry has read at least as many scripts as me and is at least as finely tuned as I am. So the first five pages are crucial. That doesn't mean they need to be perfect. It just means they need to be really thought through as to how you are launching yourself in, how you're launching your audience into your movie, because, and how you are showing that you've got this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not wasting time on a whole lot of backstory. It's not wasting too much time explaining, if it's a sci-fi movie, explaining all of the colors of the gadgets on the dashboard of the spaceship. It's not too much detail. It's characters, and more characters. It's introducing them and putting them in a situation as quickly as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And I defy you. I wait until I get a script where it's like, oh, there's too much character in the first five pages. I want to know about the world. I've never written that. I've never written that as feedback.
Yeah.
So first five pages are crucial. They really need to be thought through. But then so does the whole film. I mean, you just need... You have to go on from there. I've written a script that had a really kick-ass opening scene and then fell away completely. So,
well, that's the tough part. The whole thing has to be that good.
The whole thing has to be good. But you won't get to the whole thing if your first five pages are mediocre.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean, you know, I think a lot of that's interpreted a lot as write the craziest scene in the movie and then say 2 weeks earlier.
No.
Obviously there are movies and shows that have done that successfully. But in general, like you said, when I'm reading scripts for Write LA, I'm just thinking, just give me in these first 10 pages, I'm desperate just for, give me a character that I can invest in, relate to, be worried about, give me a dramatic question that is, oh, well, why is this way? And I have to keep reading. It doesn't have to be the most exciting thing. It's just, it's exciting because I want to get to know a character and I want to feel like emotionally connected.
Yeah. And it applies to all genres, by the way. I keep using Happy Gilmore. Have a look at I haven't seen it for a little while, but have a look at the beginning of Happy Gilmore. I'm pretty sure it's all about Adam Sandler being a jerk on the ice hockey.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And ice hockey. So, I mean, you know, it just launches into the dude. It doesn't launch into his world.
Yeah.
So, I would, characters.
You want to tell me some Australian trivia?
I do. Guy Pearce was nominated for a Golden Globe in The Brutalist. Yeah. We know Guy Pearce, the actor. Guy Pearce once had lunch with me.
Oh, okay. Just a couple of guys hanging out.
Because Guy Pearce was an actor on a TV show called Neighbours, a soap opera, which I was a writer on when I was 22. And I was working TV news, and I was writing for Neighbours as well as my side hustle, and which was insane. And I was in Canberra, and which is the city, the capital, and they were shooting it in Melbourne, and they would write it in Sydney, because this is a sausage factory soap opera that they just churn out. It was half hour episodes, five nights a week, so it was just churn it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I flew down to Melbourne because my family was there, and I went to the set, and I told the producers, I said, I want to go to the set and I want to meet the actors, and they were like, why? they just read what you tell them to. Oh, well, I thought it might be useful if they're characters. So then I went down, and Guy Pearce was a delight. And he had lunch with me and this other guy and another actor. And we had lunch at the Channel 10 cafeteria where they filmed, and Guy was delightful. And I said, is there anything that you want in your characters? You know, anything that you know? Mm. No. No, it's fine. Because, I mean, they were same age as me, and they were getting a paycheck and getting to act. And it was just, you know, no, whatever. So it was one of those experiences where I was like, I was this young, hungry writer. Like, I'm going to really invest in these characters. And the actors are like, pfft.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. But, I mean, great to see how Guy Pearce has gone on.
Yeah.
I mean, that show Neighbours launched a lot of careers. Margot Robbie was another one. But I always remember that lunch where I was like, I just went in with all of these expectations, and I left with like a completely different understanding of how TV was made.
Yeah, there's the famous story of Ryan Gosling, and I'm forgetting his name, but it's the guy that played a very famous actor who plays the older him in The Notebook. And he was super young, and he was like, hey, maybe we could talk and I could learn some of your mannerisms. And the guy's like, I don't do that. I'm going to do what I do. You do what you do. Like, we're not doing this.
Just give me the pages and shut up. So there you go. There is your Aussie trivia.
All right. I feel better as a person for having known that.
There you go. And that's it for this edition. Scriptmate is brought to you by Write LA, a website where you can get all sorts of information about writing, learn about my script feedback services, and get the details for our annual screenplay competition, Write LA, which is currently open for entries until March 4th. Go to write-la.com for all the details, write-la.com. There is a special discount code exclusively for you, a listener of this podcast. The code word for a 10% discount is POD.
POD.
POD. It works P-O-D, POD. It works on the entry portals Coverfly, Film Freeway, and our own website, which I encourage you to go to and enter there. Again, the code word is POD. POD.
POD.
Our theme music was written and performed by the Australian band The Swarm. A big thanks to them. And our beautiful graphic was designed by my talented daughter, Claire Schildberger. Thank you for listening. We are grateful. If you have a question you want answered, email me at tim@write-la.com. That's tim@write-la.com. It's also where you go if you want information about my feedback services. We'll be back soon. But for now, say goodbye, Tony.
Goodbye.